Nothing can ever blot from my memory what you have suffered in defence of your writings. I cannot help thinking of the rancorous malice of Alberic and Lotulf. A cruel uncle and an injured lover will always be present to my aching sight. I shall never forget what enemies your learning and what envy your glory raised against you. I shall never forget your reputation, so justly acquired, torn to pieces and blasted by the inexorable cruelty of pseudo-pretenders to science. Was not your treatise of divinity condemned to be burnt? Were you not threatened with perpetual imprisonment? In vain you urged in your defense that your enemies imposed upon you opinions quite different from your meanings. In vain you condemned those opinions. All was of no effect towards your justification. 'Twas resolved you should be a heretic. What did not those two false prophets accuse you of who declaimed so severely against you before the Council of Sens? What scandals were vented on occasion of the name of Paraclete given to your chapel? What a storm was raised against you by the treacherous monks when you did them the honor to be called their brother? This history of our numerous misfortunes, related in so true and moving a manner, made my heart bleed within me. My tears, which I could not refrain, have blotted half your letter. I wish they had effaced the whole, and that I had returned it to you in that condition. I should then have been satisfied with the little time I kept it, but it was demanded of me too soon. I must confess I was much easier in my mind before I read your letter. Surely, all the misfortunes of lovers are conveyed to them through the eyes. Upon reading your letter, I feel all mine renewed. I reproached myself for having been so long without venting my sorrows, when the rage of our unrelenting enemies still burns with the same fury. Since length of time, which disarms the strongest hatred, seems but to aggravate theirs, since it is decreed that your virtue shall be persecuted till it takes refuge in the grave, and even then, perhaps, your ashes will not be allowed to rest in peace. Let me always meditate on your calamities. Let me publish them through all the world, if possible, to shame an age that has not known how to value you. I will spare no one, since no one would interest himself to protect you, and your enemies are never weary of oppressing your innocence. Alas, my memory is perpetually filled with bitter remembrances of past evils. And are there more to be feared still? Shall my Abelard never be mentioned without tears? Shall the dear name never be spoken but with sighs? Observe, I beseech you, to what a wretched condition you have reduced me. Sad, afflicted, without any possible comfort unless it proceed from you. Be not then unkind, nor deny me, I beg of you, that little relief which you only can give. Let me have a faithful account of all that concerns you. I would know everything, be it ever so unfortunate. Perhaps, by mingling my sighs with yours, I may make your sufferings less, for it is said that all sorrows divided are made lighter. Tell me not, by way of excuse, you will spare me tears. The tears of women shut up in a melancholy place and devoted to penitence are not to be spared. And if you wait for an opportunity to write pleasant and agreeable things to us, you will delay writing too long. Prosperity seldom chooses the side of the virtuous, and fortune is so blind that in a crowd in which there is perhaps but one wise and brave man, it is not to be expected that she should single him out. Write to me, then, immediately, and wait not for miracles. They are too scarce, and we too much accustomed to misfortunes to expect a happy turn. I shall always have this, if you please, and this will always be agreeable to me, that when I receive any letter from you, I shall know you still remember me. Seneca, with whose writings you made me acquainted, though he was a Stoic, seemed to be so very sensible to this kind of pleasure, that upon opening any letters from Lucilius, he imagined he felt the same delight as when they conversed together. I have made it an observation since our absence, that we are much fonder of the pictures of those we love when they are at a great distance, than when they are near us. It seems to me as if the farther they are removed, their pictures grow the more finished, and acquire a greater resemblance. Or at least our imagination, which perpetually figures them to us by the desire we have of seeing them again, makes us think so. By a peculiar power, love can make that seem life itself which, as soon as the loved object returns, is nothing but a little canvas and flat color. I have your picture in my room. I never pass it without stopping to look at it. And yet, when you are present with me, I scarce ever cast my eyes on it. If a picture, which is but a mute representation of an object, can give such pleasure, what cannot letters inspire? They have souls, they can speak, they have in them all that force which expresses the transports of the heart. They have all the fire of our passions. They can raise them as much as if the persons themselves were present. They have all the tenderness and the delicacy of speech, and sometimes even a boldness of expression beyond it. We may write to each other, so innocent a pleasure is not denied us. Let us not lose through negligence the only happiness which is left us, and the only one, perhaps, which the malice of our enemies can never ravish from us. I shall read that you are my husband, and you shall see me sign myself your wife. In spite of all our misfortunes, you may be what you please in your letter. Letters were first invented for consoling such solitary wretches as myself. Having lost the substantial pleasures of seeing and possessing you, I shall in some measure compensate this loss by the satisfaction I shall find in your writing. There I shall read your most sacred thoughts. I shall carry them always about with me. I shall kiss them every moment. If you can be capable of any jealousy, let it be for the fond caresses I shall bestow upon your letters, and envy only the happiness of those rivals. That writing may be no trouble to you, write always to me carelessly and without study. I had rather read the dictates of the heart than of the brain. I cannot live if you will not tell me that you still love me. But that language ought to be so natural to you that I believe you cannot speak otherwise to me without violence to yourself. And since by this melancholy relation to your friend you have awakened all my sorrows, 'tis but reasonable you should allay them by some tokens of your unchanging love. I do not, however, reproach you for the innocent artifice you made use of to comfort a person in affliction by comparing his misfortune to another far greater. Charity is ingenious in finding out such pious plans, and to be commended for using them. But do you owe nothing more to us than to that friend, be the friendship between you ever so intimate? We are called your sisters. We call ourselves your children. And if it were possible to think of any expression which could signify a dearer relation, or a more affectionate regard and mutual obligation between us, we should use it. If we could be so ungrateful as not to speak our just acknowledgments to you, this church, these altars, these walls, would reproach our silence and speak for us. But without leaving it to that, it will always be a pleasure to me to say that you only are the founder of this house. 'Tis wholly your work. You, by inhabiting here, have given fame and holiness to a place known before only for robberies and murders. You have, in a literal sense, made the den of thieves into a house of prayer. These cloisters owe nothing to public charities. Our walls were not raised by the usuries of publicans, nor their foundations laid in